is Easier Done Than Said, alongside my brand new co-host, Mr. Kevin Bradway.
Yes, sir. Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
I'm Ryan. Now, full disclosure, this is the second time we've tried to start up this podcast. The first time, I asked Dave if he knows what our tagline was from. This one, Dave probably would know, but as I posed the question to Kevin, neither of us knew, which is unsettling because I picked the movie. I took a couple seconds, I figured it out, and if you have listened to the show, especially last week, we actually said you should probably stop what you're doing, and that included listening to our podcast, and watch this movie. Kevin, you've seen it, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. So, and you liked it, so you're on board.
I enjoy it. It's a good one.
All right. If you can figure out, using your Google powers or your IMDb powers, as they may be, what that tagline is, check out the movie and send it over to us. Moviesonup@gmail.com is how you can get in touch with us through the emails, or you can get at us on Twitter @moviesonup, or there's probably a way, I'm pretty sure there's a way you can just get on our website, moviesonup.com, and let us know what your guess is there. If you get it right, if we like you, we'll send out a prize pack, which now is going, we can actually go forward with this because we have got a kick-ass new logo.
We do. It's beautiful.
Yeah, thanks in part to Kevin, mostly to Kevin's buddy Morgan, for hooking us up with our fly new logo. It makes us feel like a real podcast now. So I don't feel bad trying to submit it someplace to get a button made because it looks like a grown-up. An adult person put together our logo, and that's a cool thing. So, again, big thanks to Morgan for giving us a real podcast logo. So things we're going to get to this week, big news over at Fox, they had a big shakeup over there. We also have more from our Movies on Up Young Readers Corner. Kevin and I will bitch about some new movies coming out that came out of TIFF this weekend, and some old movies that are being repackaged. What I presume was the number one movie of the weekend, and that was the latest in the Resident Evil saga, we'll put it that, Resident Evil Retribution.
It was. It brought in $21 million to take home the box office this week, about $7,000 per screen. Following Resident Evil was the 3D re-release of Finding Nemo at $16.6 million. After that, we've got The Possession, Lawless still hanging around, The Expendables still made $3 million, Paranorman, The Words, which we didn't feel kindly about, but it brought in $2.8 million, followed by Bourne Legacy at $8 million, Odd Life of Timothy Green at $9 million, and rounding out the top 10 was The Campaign with $2.4 million.
Okay, so I mean, I guess, well, not that we did an over-under this week, but I would say, being that Dave's not here, I think he probably would have said somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 for Resident Evil, and it was close. Won the box office, so that was good. And, you know, for being as far into this as we are, and I've heard the movie itself isn't that good, I think that's a decent number for that movie. Finding Nemo, I'm a little surprised that it didn't make more. You know, we kind of mentioned that Lion King did very well, and some of the other Disney re-releases have done very, very well, and Finding Nemo was a movie that made a bunch of money when it first came out anyway. But that's it. You know, the wide releases did pretty well this week, except for that Last Ounce of Courage, which wasn't really a wide release. It was kind of one of those mid-to-wide releases. I think it was somewhere around the 2,000 screen mark, but obviously it didn't do well enough for us to really warrant talking about it. Some of the limited releases, however, were really, really limited in the amount of screens they were on, but made a very good amount of money for that. Chief among them was The Master.
Yes, The Master made $736,000, and that was only on...
Is it four screens?
Four screens.
Yeah.
So it's bringing home big money. People were lining up to see that movie, selling out every screening of it. Along with that, we had Arbitrage, which actually made about $10,000 per screen. We had 10 Years, which only was on three screens, but it made $22,000. And obviously not a limited release, but I wanted to mention that Dark Knight Rises still brought in $2.1 million to put things in perspective.
And that movie's been out, what, like a month and a half, 2 months almost?
I think it's been more than 2 months.
So, yeah, did you happen to see like what the total for Dark Knight was, like total gross?
The Dark Knight actually is at $441 million now, over $441 million. So it's still going, making $2.1 million this week.
It's still climbing, and we'll have to see how far it falls off next week without looking too far ahead. I don't know how many new releases are really going to be there to challenge,
right,
and see if it can be knocked further down out of the top 15, we'll say. So thanks to Kevin's magical ability to look up on the computer, that puts The Dark Knight over $1 billion worldwide, and that makes it, I think, the 9th highest grossing film of all time worldwide. Of course, the number one highest grossing film worldwide of all time, little independent movie that you may or may not have seen, called Avatar. One of the guys responsible for bringing Avatar is now unemployed. That would be Tom Rothman, a former film chairman and CEO of Fox, has left. After 18 years with the company, he will be leaving as of January 1st. December 31st will be his last day on the job. Rothman has been the runner of Fox since 2000. Co-chairman Jim Giannopoulos will be taking over the helm. He's been with the company for a while, too, so I don't really see that as being kind of a not really a huge story.
He's been there 12 years, Giannopoulos I'm referring to, and he's kind of like the right-hand man. He does all the same things, so it'll be easy for him to just step into the role and continue to pump out movies for Fox.
Before he became the main guy at Fox, he ran Fox Searchlight, and that also, you know, produced quite a few pleasant surprises. I mean, recently, Slumdog Millionaire.
Yes. Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah. Some movies that made quite a bit of money and also have been pretty well received critically.
For our listeners, I don't know if they're aware actually what this guy's job is, but...
Was, yeah.
I should say. What he essentially does is make sure the budgeting is staying on track and that people aren't spending Fox's money too loosely. So he kind of gives it an okay or not, whether or not the movie can move on. For example, recently, even though Seth MacFarlane's Avenue is Fox, he passed on Ted. So it was his call to say, no, we don't want to pick up Ted. Let someone else mess with it.
So, I mean, there are people that think that may have played a role in him stepping down. But really, in fairness, I think it's kind of hypocritical for anybody at Fox to say, boy, what the hell's the matter with you? This Seth MacFarlane guy's a genius. Why would you ever not want something he's doing? And they were, you know, the people that were responsible for canceling Family Guy in the first place.
Oh, that's all right. They got it back.
Yeah, they got it back. So maybe Ted 2, Electric Boogaloo, will be back on Fox. Yeah, you know, kind of like you were saying, he's the guy that makes sure that Fox doesn't end up, you know, going bankrupt. He's the guy that makes sure that Johnny Depp isn't spending $300 million on a Lone Ranger movie.
Right. He doesn't want to show up to Slumdog Millionaire 2 set and Danny Boyle say, oh, yeah, I spent $1.4 billion on this one dance scene.
So, I mean, I think, you know, if we kind of look back at his time at Fox, I think every studio probably has some of those Ted misses. I mean, really, Ted being the giant sleeper hit of this summer, there were a lot of studios that are probably kicking themselves for passing on that one. But I think that it's tough to even say that it's his resume because he was co-chairman. So, you know, the guy that's Giannopoulos still had something to do with this. So I think, I mean, as a team, I think they're relatively successful.
It's a pretty funny job because these are guys that yeah, it's difficult. It's a lot of stress to decide yes or no, because if you say yes and it's a huge hit, you're going to receive so much credit for something that isn't relatively hard to do, which is just say yes. If you say yes and the movie bombs, you're going to receive a ton of scrutiny. And if you pass on something like Ted that's huge somewhere else, it might cost you your job. And I think the next movie we're going to talk about, he probably had an opportunity to say yes to.
Yeah, I think at least, maybe not the third one, but at least the first one, a lot of studios had said yes. And then after meeting the director, probably said no, because, you know, and if you watch the documentary about the first movie, and of course, at this point, we're talking about Boondock Saints. Troy Duffy, kind of a douchebag,
yes,
pissed
absolutely.
Off about everybody you could possibly piss off in Hollywood. But he's still at it. We're looking at a Boondock Saints 3 on the docket. Well, that's at least according to Norman Reedus. Sean Patrick Flannery and Troy Duffy, and he all had a meeting, I think it was this past weekend, at Duffy's douche palace out in California. And they're kicking around ideas to do Boondock Saints 3. What do you think?
I'm personally not a fan of Boondocks 1 or 2, and I am definitely in the minority. I know people who have tattoos of this movie who swear by this movie.
You might be in the minority of not being a fan of 1.
Right.
Which I liked 1. I thought the first one was good. People talk about it being, you know, a Tarantino ripoff, and it is obviously very much influenced by Tarantino, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I thought the movie was enjoyable. The second one was a pile of shit.
Yeah, and I think you answered your own question. If the second one's a pile of shit, why the need for the third one? In my opinion, the best thing to come out of the Boondock Saints franchise is the documentary we were speaking of called Overnight. Yeah. Which, where Troy Duffy basically struggles to get Boondock Saints made.
He struggles because he's a douchebag. It didn't have to be a struggle.
Right.
Weinstein's gave him a bunch of money.
I still feel bad in the end because those Miramax fucks made him sign a contract where he can't profit off the film.
He did piss, like, you know, we mentioned pissing off the Weinsteins. This is what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps and you piss off the Weinsteins. They make sure that you can't. They bought the guy a bar.
Yeah,
like they did pretty well by him. There's a bunch of documentaries and a bunch of books on how to make a movie, how to get your movie made, how to get your script made. This is a great example of how not to do it.
Yeah.
Pretty much every don't that would be on a list, Duffy does. But the one thing I'll say for him is, the dude not only got his movie made, and it gained a cult following. At this point, he's working on a second sequel too. There's a lot of people that don't get three chances to make a movie, and you know, love them, hate them, whatever. You just can't seem to kill that franchise. This next one, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing the boat on this. I could be talking out of my ass, but I'm kind of hoping that after I explain it to you, you'll kind of feel the same way that this should be. This idea should be kind of dead on arrival. Adam Wingert, the guy that did Your Next and was one of the guys responsible for VHS, which was the horror anthology movie that Dave and I talked so glowingly about before we actually saw it, and then slightly less glowingly after, has signed on to direct Dead Spy Running, which I thought, oh, neat. This is going to be a mashup of two of my favorite genres, and that is, of course, spy movies and zombie movies. Turns out, not really about zombies, and it's not even really about a secret agent. It is about a DJ, a disc jockey, not necessarily a disc jockey, but like a club DJ, DJ, that kind of DJ, running from MI6 after they suspect him of killing his secret agent father. Now, this was based on a John Stock novel, and if you'll pardon the sarcasm and the pun, you know, this sounds like a hit.
I think when this movie starts to get the press out there and you see a trailer for it, I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of focus on the fact that he's a DJ. Right now, you've got like Deadmau5 and Skrillex, who all the kids seem to love. This is a type of music, you know, and dubstep, that just is popular for God knows why. But I think that'll be a big focus. Like, people are going to see this movie and say, oh, it's about a DJ.
And I think that is kind of central to the plot as well. I mean, I didn't read. I think there's a series of books. Like, this isn't just one book. This is a series of books about a secret agent DJ. And I guess his ability to DJ factors into the plot somehow. Like, you know, that somehow is going to be what saves him or saves the world is his ability on the ones and twos.
Do you remember that Richard Greco, If Looks Could Kill movie?
Yeah.
I wish we were talking about that instead of this.
And I guess we could.
And they were remaking that.
It's our fucking show. We can talk about whatever we want.
That, yeah. I don't see the need for this movie. I think a lot of money. If someone says yes or someone has said yes to this, then...
Yeah, I mean, somebody said yes. His name was Adam Wingert. And, you know, again, it's a book series. Ugh. So, you know, I guess... There's a publishing company out there, I don't know who they are, but has said, yes, I would like you to write another one of these books, Mr. Stock. We'll keep with the spy-ish theme. It's From Russia with Love for MGM. The studio has bought the rights to Russian post-apocalyptic series Metro 2033, which is a Russian novel by, and I'm sorry, Dmitry, but I'm going to brutalize your last name, Glukhovsky. The work was first published online. So it's kind of an interesting way that this came about. It was an online novel that was published in 2002. Then it got published and turned into a 20-book series. And then spawned a video game, which I actually saw on the shelf of a store here locally about a couple days ago. I thought, oh, shit. I thought it was just a Russian video game. Turns out, nope, it's available here in the States, too. So if you want a little bit of a taste of Metro 2033, pick up the game. I didn't. I picked it up and put it right back down.
when I hear of something like this, my first thought is always, where is the line drawn for a video game to become a movie or vice versa? Because there's a lot better video game franchises out there that don't have movies yet. And when, I don't know, I guess this is just part of the new thing where when a movie comes out, it's going to have a book, a movie, a video game, and the lineage comes from one or the other and then becomes the other.
Yeah, I think in this case, it's not necessarily the video game that spawned the movie. I get the feeling that it's more the novel series, which seems to be spawning a lot of movies. I mean, we just talked about the DJ Secret Agent, which was a book series. There'll be some more book series that we talk about, but I guess that kind of seems like that's the thing now, is you co-opt a property that's been proven in another medium. There are plenty of people like myself that don't read books. There's zero chance I'm going to read 20 of these Ruski novels. Maybe I'll go see this movie. The game didn't look that good, but you know, that's not really necessarily an indictment of the story, because a lot of video games, the story's good, but the game sucks.
I'm not a big gamer, but my experience with games recently is that you're playing a movie. Yeah. So the folks who are playing this game, you're going to go spend $10 at the cinema to see what you played, and you have 8 hours of interactive enjoyment or more, whereas in this case, you're going to go see a two-hour movie.
One of the cool things that I read about this, and it kind of speaks to a level of interactivity with the video games, is there's this idea to take different spins on the story. It's post-apocalyptic, and it largely takes place in Russia, but to see, well, what's going on, you know, in some other part of the world. And that's an idea that they tried to do with that Battle Los Angeles movie. Mm. They were going to make a Battle Buenos Aires, Battle Tokyo, whatever. But since the first one shit the bed, they deep-sixed it real quick. So that's something that they had kind of tossed out with this, is to try and kind of co-opt it into a larger story made up of, you know, individualized serials, I guess. The films are set to be produced by Mark Johnson, who is not a stranger to the world of literature and film, as he was the producer on the Chronicles of Narnia, which, you know, seems to have done all right.
Yeah, it did pretty well.
Larry David's cast is becoming clear. Clear History, which will be helmed by Greg Mottola of Superbad and Paul, has added Danny McBride, Bill Hader, Kate Hudson, Amy Ryan, Evan Mendez, Philip Baker Hall, and J.B. Smoove. They will all join John Hamm, and for the third podcast in the row, we're going to talk a little Michael Keaton movie.
I hope we keep that going.
It's not so much, I'm not making this shit up. It just so happens I find a story that, it just happens to involve Michael Keaton. And I think that's probably for the betterment of everybody, and I think that this cast keeps, the more people they add, it keeps getting better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of funny people. There's a lot of really solid all-around names in this film. And I think, you know, obviously with Larry David's involvement, it's going to be good. And now you add Michael Keaton, probably is the headlining name, the one that stands out. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of these, as we're looking at the list, you know, a lot of these guys have experience doing sort of improv, which I don't think this movie is entirely improv, but I think there are probably going to be parts of it that are. And I know that John Hamm does have a background for that. I mean, it may not, you know, jump right out to you, Don Draper doing improv, but he's a funny dude. If you see him on 30 Rock, he was funny there.
He's funny in Bridesmaids.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a funny dude. He has ability to improv. Obviously, so does Danny McBride, J.B. Smoove, Bill Hader. So yeah, I think this will be a pretty good flick. And I'm kind of excited about it. I'm also excited about the new James Bond movie. I just got a little bit more excited as news came out this week that Adele will now write and perform the new Bond theme song. And despite the best efforts of Jack Black and Alicia Keys, kind of the newer Bond themes have been garbage, thanks in large part to garbage. This kind of, I haven't heard the song yet, but you know, Adele's style kind of reminds me of Shirley Bassey, who is the only person ever to do multiple Bond theme songs. She did three, Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, and Moonraker. Not that that necessarily makes or breaks the movie.
Right.
But I think they add quite a bit.
I think that Bond songs are a legacy. There's a tradition. You really can't attach songs to movies and movie franchises in any other situation other than Bond. I mean, can you think of one that jumps out? Probably not. The most popular Bond themes were probably, and you're a Bond fan, so maybe not in your...
I have my favorites.
But Live and Let Die, Paul that McCartney, and Wings, that was the most commercially successful and all-around successful. You had Nobody Does It Better by Carly Simon.
It's a good one, too.
You Only Live Twice by Nancy Sinatra.
Yep.
And my favorite, which was View from a Kill by Duran Duran.
That's also Dave's favorite. From the movie he's never seen, but he's heard the song. So I guess that just kind of proves it, you know? Like, Dave, having never seen a Bond movie in his life, has probably heard at least three out of the four that, you know, we just mentioned there.
Oh, yeah, and I just named four. I mean, I think there's about 1,700 Bond movies at this point, so...
Slightly less than that.
If you go through and I read the rest of the list...
But yeah, and I mean, you throw in, you know, some names that have done Bond movies recently. I mean, obviously, Jack Black and Alicia Keys, but also U2 did one, Chris Cornell... did one, famous maybe, I don't know. Tina Turner, Madonna, like some big names have been involved recently. I don't think any as big and as in their prime as Adele. So I'm kind of pumped about that. Well, I think it can only make the movie better. The next one involves two things that I like. I'll leave you to guess which two. Nazis, Queen Amidala, and Forrest Gump. Another guy, I'm going to ruin his name, but, you know, whatever. Michel Hanzavicious, he's related to Joe Juravicious, but is the director of The Artist. He will direct In the Garden of Beasts for Tom Hanks. Hanks will play the first American ambassador to Hitler's Germany. Natalie Portman is being targeted to play Hanks's daughter. She, Queen Amidala, she's not a Nazi. So
right.
Just in case you didn't know.
This is Tom Hanks' Playtone label. And it's basically going to be a character study of William Dodd, who was the first ambassador. And the funny thing about it was William Dodd, him and his daughter kind of went around town saying, like, oh, yeah, Nazis aren't so bad. Like, they're good people. Like, oh, it's cool. To find out when they went to Germany how bad things really were. So it's definitely in Tom Hanks' wheelhouse, where it's just going to be a study of a character who completely flip-flops feelings, you know.
Coming to the realization that Nazis maybe are not nice people.
Yeah.
And I kind of think the interesting thing about, you know, just from reading this, apparently his daughter kind of, even after she was there, still dug Nazis.
Yeah,
right?
And another thing I'm looking forward to is that William Dodd was considered within the U.S. government as being kind of a strange bird. People said he was kind of a weird dude, and he was definitely considered undiplomatic. So seeing Hanks portray someone like this should be interesting.
It'd be interesting, and it's pre-World War II, and it's not like the Nazis would really accept an American ambassador after we started shooting at him.
Right.
But obviously it takes place before we dropped the atomic bomb, which had apparently some unintended side effects. It ended the war in Japan and also created Godzilla.
Yes.
So Asians, beware. May 16th, 2014, it's going to be a bad day for you. That's when Gareth Edwards' Godzilla will emerge from the depths and show up on the big screen. The script is being penned by David Callum of The Expendables, and take that for what it's worth. Also, David S. Goyer did the Batman movies, and Max Bornstein, The Seventh Son.
This is a franchise that has survived and always will survive. Pardon the pun, because it's Godzilla. But you can remember the 1998 steaming pile of flop.
I can't remember that.
Puffy actually had a song for us. Speaking
he
of
did.
Movies.
Puffy and Robert Plant.
And, Matthew Broderick was in the film.
Sure.
And for that particular one, I can remember like fast food places giving away all kinds of Godzilla stuff.
All sorts
and
of Italians.
And I don't think with the people involved that this one's going to be that same... commercial sort of Godzilla, but it's just...
Godzilla.
Godzilla. Gozira. But it's interesting. It's interesting that this franchise seems to come back every couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, people absolutely dropped their shit at Comic-Con the very little bit that was shown of it. It was essentially just kind of a voiceover about the atomic bomb. It was the... Godzilla, scream, roar, whatever you want to call it. And I think it was kind of like a shadowy shot of the monster. I don't think they really ever showed it too well. But yeah, people were geeked out of their minds. So I think being that the Matthew Broderick one sucked so bad, people are kind of really, really excited that this one could actually be good. You mentioned you can't kill Godzilla, just keeps coming back and coming back. Not unlike Kevin Costner, and Dave's request for more Kevin Costner, has been granted by the Explorers Guild. It's another one of these, we just mentioned that Ruski movie, Apocalypse, whatever, 2033. This is another multi-platform project consisting of books, a film, and an animated series. Kevin Costner has signed on to play a role in the movie and actually provide some voice work for the animated series. Costner, to steal from NBA Jam, he's on fire with the Hatfields and McCoys, the Jack Ryan, and Without Remorse, he's playing the same role in both of those movies. And, of course, being Pa Kent in The Man of Steel, the guy's everywhere now.
Yeah, Kevin Costner's won a slew of Oscars, I think all for Dances with Wolves.
I think he won actor and director, didn't he?
And he was nominated, I think, in every category. After that, he's tended to win a lot of Razzies. I'm guessing the Razzies probably outweigh the... Outweigh the Oscars. Not in weight, but in amount. But what I want to talk about is... Does something like this work when it's not organic? It's a planned franchise that will include animation, books, and a movie. Like we were just talking about the video game thing. Does it work when it's not just a book, and the book's so good that you want to make it a movie? I mean, is this what we're coming to, where it's going to be a pre-planned, we're going to come out with a book, a movie, a video game, an animated series, a comic book?
I think it is awfully presumptuous to say that, you know, you're going to do one and it's going to be so successful that people are going to care about the other stuff. I think that it is a safer bet. It's easier to do when you do one thing. It turns out well. So you do something else. It turns out well. You do a third thing. They are kind of putting all their chips in this Explorers Guild pile, so to speak. And it may end up being really, really good, but...
It just seems like the way they're going about it, which almost sounds like they're going to kind of make these things all relatively close to each other and not give it time to develop. They're wasting a lot of time and money developing something that they might have to just shelf. Whereas if you come out with a book and after 2 years the book's doing well, hey, we'll come out with a movie. Oh, people like the movie so much, let's make a video game.
Now, this next one is right up Dave's alley. It would be from our Movies On Up Young Readers Corner. Interestingly enough, New Line has purchased the rights to The Raven Boys by Maggie Stiefvater, which is kind of interesting because the book hasn't even come out yet. I think it comes out like in a week or two. I mean, obviously, somebody's probably read it. Somebody at New Line has read it. I don't think they bought the rights sight unseen. And this lady has written some other books that have done relatively well. I don't know if this is a continuation of a series. From the plot synopsis I read on Amazon, it didn't seem that it was a continuation of something else. It just seemed like this is her latest thing. And New Line is banking on the success of some of her other projects. But again, this is one of those things that, you know, they're really kind of, I guess, hoping that there's enough buzz from the novel that people will be interested in seeing a film adaptation.
Well, for our readers, I'll read to them what it's about, and they can decide whether there's buzz enough to see it. It's about a girl with parents who see dead people, but she doesn't until she does. She can't kiss her true love, or he will end up with one of these dead folks. So it's out there. I mean, it sounds like shit. It really does to me. And I just, how long are we going to have to deal with this? They're looking for the next Twilight.
Yeah, I think even, I mean, I did happen to see the cover art for the book. It's reminiscent of Twilight. And I think you'd be a dumbass not to.
Can we, like, re-educate children? I understand the ones now who are fully encompassed in this, you know, preteen, like, romance, vampire, supernatural novels.
I'm
like,
glad you bring this up, Mr. Stuffy English Minor. yeah, please. Obviously, these movies are being handpicked because kids are into this shit. I can't blame people for doing this, because you look at Twilight, you look at The Hunger Games. These make money, and that's what, you know, if you're running Fox, that's what your job is to do. It's to, you know, pick projects, you know, that are going to be hits. And these, you know, like them or hate them, it's hard to argue.
Yeah.
And you're not going to, are you?
No.
Fair enough. Moving right along. This next work would not be approved for our young readers. Former Penthouse pet and porno chick Sunny Leone makes her Bollywood debut. She'll be in a movie called Jism 2. Let that sink in. Apparently, that's the Hindi word for body. And you really can't make this shit up.
No.
Porno chick in a movie called Jism 2. And it may be the first time she's actually in a movie called Jism 2.
I don't know if she... Was she in Jism 1?
She wasn't in Jism 1.
I missed that one.
No. Apparently, this other Bollywood chick was in Jism 1. And it's not as sexy of a film as you might think. They have, by they, the synopsis that I read, assured me that there is no frontal nudity in Jism 2. I'm going to guess there's no frontal nudity in Jism 1 either. But to be honest with you, I forget what the movie's about.
Good for Sunny Leone, though. I mean, she can't make it in Hollywood, and she's not going to give up on her dream, so she goes to Bollywood to star in Jism 2.
What would be her dream?
As an actress. She got tired of taking off her clothes, and now she wants to be an actress.
Well, I think she's still kind of taking off her clothes in this movie, but at least not frontally.
Not frontally.
Yes.
She's taking off the back of her clothes.
Yeah, she's wearing like overalls. She's gonna like open up that shit seat. I don't know. I can neither confirm nor deny that's gonna happen. But definitely, Jism 2 is gonna happen. So, you know, I'd be on the lookout for that. I guess. Always be on the lookout for Jism. The 300 sequel. It gets its title. It's not Jism. Not Jism 301. It's called 300, Rise of an Empire. Still slated for an August 2013 release. Do you care?
Have we waited too long?
I think so.
I mean, 300 came out in 2006.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. That was a long-ass time ago.
Yeah, and I think it did better than expected. It was a huge hit.
Yeah.
But, I don't care.
I think there's been so many movies that have come out since then that are in the vein of 300 that I think has really kind of diluted the water. So, no, I don't. I mean, it'll probably still make money. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of bros that are going to, hey, man, let's go, like, drink Muscle Milk and watch. I mean, I saw the first 300, but, like, I don't think I'm really interested in seeing this one. We've jerked you off long enough. Kind of the big thing from last weekend, was, of course, TIFF. That's the Toronto International Film Festival. One thing that I was particularly interested in that came out of that weekend was the conversation, I wish it was at breakfast, but it was at dinner, between James Gunn and Nathan Fillion. They talked a bit of Guardians of the Galaxy. According to Fillion, his commitment to Castle will most likely rule him out of being involved in that project, which I don't think is that big of a deal. I'm cool with it. I wouldn't be surprised if Fillion ends up in a Marvel movie, but obviously probably not going to be Guardians of the Galaxy. I think we're kind of hoping for him for Ant-Man.
Yeah, I say forget Star-Lord, and there's three Ant-Men, so...
Ant-Peoples.
Yeah, why can't Nathan Fillion be one of them? From what I read of the script and what Edgar Wright has done, and this could obviously change or just be rumors, the movie's going to focus on one of the new Ant-Men as he works for the government and he finds the research done by Hank Pym, who is the original Ant-Man, which will show flashbacks of... his research and stuff. So, therefore, in the movie, it looks like there's going to be...
Two Ant-Men.
And you're telling me one of them can't be Nathan Fillion?
Ant-Dudes. I'm sure... I think it really could be. I think kind of the natural thing for people to do is associate... Oh, well, James Gunn's involved. And so, clearly, Fillion's going to be involved. Which you could very easily make the same kind of leap from, oh, Joss Whedon's involved, Nathan Fillion's going to be involved. So I think between these two dudes, one of them is going to get Nathan Fillion in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be the goddamned if it ended up being Edgar Wright? But, of course, Whedon is kind of the overlord of all of that shit. And, you know, if Edgar Wright gets Fillion involved as Ant-Man, preferably the newer Ant-Man, there's, you know, there's two.
I'll tell you what. Eric O'Grady, who is the last Ant-Man, kind of looks a little bit like Simon Pegg.
I guess we could see that happening. They could both be Ant-Men, like you're saying.
It'll be Nick Frost and Simon Pegg.
One person that I know won't be Ant-Man, although he has been known to run around in a mask, and that is the Belarusian director Makhanov, who sold this creepy kid horror movie, come out and play to Cinedigm. I'm not trying to bury the lead here. You know, a lot of movies get sold at these film festivals. That's what they're for, largely. The motherfucker wears a bag on his head in public.
Yes.
Like, this is his thing. He wears a bag.
It looks kind of like a pillowcase with like holes cut out.
A red pillowcase with holes cut out.
This story is really, really funny.
Like the fucking Scarecrow.
Yeah, this story is like really funny to me just because in my mind, I think about... He's going to be at like a film festival or like a premiere, and somebody's going to unmask him and reveal him to be another director. And my money's like
Steven Spielberg
or Clint Eastwood. It was Eastwood the whole time.
It sounds like a Scooby-Doo caper.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot believe it. Like, Cinedigm must have really, really liked this. And it might be end up being a good movie. I don't know anything about it other than this couple goes to Mexico for some kind of vacation. These creepy-ass kids show up and try to kill him.
Yes.
Fair enough. But I would have problems being a movie star. And I know a lot of directors are weird. I love Tarantino, and I know he's one weird dude. Yeah. But I'd have problems trying to cut a check to a motherfucker wearing a pillowcase. But that's just me. You know, whatever. TIFF is around, like Cannes is around, to sell movies, to show and to get your movies sold into distribution. That's kind of the business side of it. The kind of critical side, the side that most people are interested in, is when the films themselves premiere, you know, kind of the reaction to them and what people seem to think. There were a couple movies that picked up quite a bit of buzz. I don't think it's a big surprise, at least not to listeners of this podcast, that Argo got some pretty good buzz coming out of TIFF. That's Ben Affleck's joint about the film crew that poses as a film crew to smuggle some folks out of the Middle East.
Yeah. What I want to do here is, when we're talking about these movies, I'm going to give you one word to kind of sum up the feeling that came out of TIFF about these next few movies. For Argo itself, the word would be buzz. People thought this would be good. A lot of good people are involved. The script's good. The trailer looks good. But after seeing it, it's come to life that this is a real potential threat to win some awards. And it looks really good. So buzz for that one.
Buzz for Argo. The next one, and I sincerely hope your word is vindication, and that is Cloud Atlas picking up some big buzz.
What I have written down here is that your fantasy film ball pick is looking better and better. My word.
Wait, I was gonna say, which is your word? That was a lot of them.
Well, I'm not gonna lead with my word.
All right,
my word for Cloud Atlas is unforgettable. Other words that are being thrown around are movie of the year and cinema changing, which are big weighty words.
Yeah,
you know, those are. I guess it's an unbelievable experience, and a lot of people are already saying you need to see it two or three times to fully
and I hope people do
appreciate Ryan's fantasy film ball pick, Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, kind of another movie it's getting talked about quite a bit, and it's a movie that we talked about, I think it was last week, and that is The Iceman.
My word for The Iceman is limited, with a question mark on the end. While a lot of people who went to TIFF said that The Iceman was their favorite film that they saw, I kind of question whether the content of The Iceman will allow it to be commercially successful.
It is really violent.
Yeah, there's headshots in the trailer.
A few.
And it's based on a hitman. I mean, it's a violent, violent movie. So does this end up being a Boondock Saints or a Eastern Promises? Or can it make it to theaters and make a lot of money?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I mean, I personally, I think it'll, you know, it'll get a theatrical release, and I will see it because it does look really neat. But then again, I'm a sick bastard. That shit doesn't bother me. Apparently, it is impossible not to cheer at the end of the movie. Impossible. Especially when the family that the movie is based on is sitting in the theater with you, which happened.
Yes. My word for the impossible is emotional. Because it is based on a real family, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it wasn't purposely written to jerk your emotions, but I guess the movie's kind of three acts where you are introduced to them and everything. Giant tsunami hits and everyone in the theater.
I don't mean to be a dick, but I think a lot of movies are three acts.
Yeah, well, yeah. As you get on me about being an English minor, yeah. But the middle section of the movie, the tsunami and everyone in the theater's in tears. If I could pick a second word, it would be gore, because there's a supposed gnarly leg wound in this movie on Naomi Watts that I'm looking forward to seeing. I hope it's better than the one in, what's it, James Franco?
The one where he like cuts his arm off?
Yeah, I hope it's better than that.
27
hours,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess your word for this next one. It's a documentary based on The Shining. It's called Room 237, How About Weirdos?
Close. It's nerds.
Okay.
Leave it to nerds to watch a movie frame by frame or backwards. In this case, it's Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. Basically, what these nerds have done is convince themselves that there are conspiracy theories or deeper meanings in this film. And what they do is they watch this movie in every way that you can watch it and try and prove to you that they're right.
And I guess you'll have to take a look for yourself to see if they are right. Kind of another movie that's getting a bit of buzz, and that is one Dave's looking forward to, possibly because he wants to make the sex into Katniss, and that is the Silver Lining Playbook, and apparently quite a silver lining for Jennifer Lawrence's performance in that film.
My word for this movie is actually not a word at all, but it's J-Law, which is a nickname. There's a lot of enthusiasm that she's going to get a Best Actress nomination for this film and damn well might win it. Silver Linings Playbook follows Bradley Cooper, who's kind of a crazy guy, and this is a comedy. They kind of get romantical.
She's nuts, too. They're both nuts.
Yeah. And but it's supposed to be fantastic and enthralling to everyone.
Look good. Kind of our next list of movies all look good, and they're probably decent movies. They're just not getting quite the buzz or maybe not the high reviews that we thought they might get. The first one is going to lead right with The Master, a movie that, you know, I think both of us think is going to be really good. You're pumped as hell to see it, and I'll see it too, but it's just the buzz isn't quite there. It's kind of strange.
I think it's been overshadowed a little bit by, like, Cloud Atlas, and then there are a couple other movies, but Cloud Atlas especially is the one that has changed everything for everyone. But for The Master, this is where I kind of started thinking outside of the box with my words, so they're going to get a little better. My word for The Master is Radiohead.
Okay, that's out of the box.
I think there's probably 1,000 different words that have already been attached to this movie and Paul Thomas Anderson movies in general.
I don't think Radiohead's been attached to this movie yet.
So I went with Radiohead, as in the band of Johnny Greenwood, who scored the film and frankly was robbed of an Oscar for There Will Be Blood. The other words would be like controversy, deliberate, film as art. There's all sorts of weird words. We've talked about The Master for weeks.
Or like Radiohead, in that if you're into that band, you're really fucking into them. And if you don't really, you know, if you're not, there aren't people that are lukewarm
right,
on Radiohead.
Right.
I don't think there'll be people that are lukewarm on this movie.
That's absolutely right. That's why I read that.
That's why you did that. Yeah, exactly. And Bill Murray looks good in Hyde Park on Hudson as he plays FDR. Apparently, the movie doesn't look as good. He's kind of the highlight of it.
Yeah, my word is Venkman. Referring to Bill Murray, who shines as FDR, which I guess is the only thing really worth checking out in this movie. It's considered to be very slow, and Bill Murray's just great in it from what I hear and what I read out of TIFF.
One thing that really shines about our next movie is a double hand job. So much that Dave titled one of our episodes Double Handy in honor of Bella's performance in On the Road.
It's funny that you say double hand job because my word is cunnilingus.
Oh, okay.
Because obviously Kristen Stewart's getting slammed for the affair that she had with Snow White and the Huntsman director. Mm-hmm. And it's actually bringing negative press along to this film because everyone's so mad at Kristen Stewart.
Get to the cunnilingus, please.
Well, he performed cunnilingus on her, the director.
Oh, excellent.
That was the affair. So for those,
boy, did he get hosed.
Yeah, the affair, her and Robert Pattinson broke up because the director performed cunnilingus.
He cunnilingusized her.
Right. But yeah, so there's negative press around this film because of that. I guess it made a good attempt at the Kerouac novel, but it just kind of falls flat, or it's played safe. It's just a pretty safe imagining of what the novel is.
I cannot imagine that our next movie would play it safe. There's many things you can say about Rob Zombie as a director, but the safety, probably not one of the words you'd use to describe any of his movies, including his latest, Lords of Salem.
Right. My word is cult, which zombies films are usually loved or hated. This is his most ambitious, but sort of like Radiohead and The Master, Zombie, those who like his music tend to like his movies, and there's examples of other where just because you like his music, you'll like his movies, or just because you like his movies, you'll like his music. But basically, this movie follows a radio DJ who receives a record in the mail by a band called The Lords. And after she plays it on the air, all sorts of fucked up shit happens, including flashbacks to the Salem witch trials. But particularly, it's not supposed to be that good. But like I said, the cult of zombie fans are gonna see it.
I'll see it.
Yeah, I'll see it too.
Fair enough. I guess we're in the cult. Speaking, of course, of Rob Zombie and not playing it safe, he did the unsafe thing by trying to remake one of the classic horror films of all time. That was, of course, House of a Thousand Corpses. Now, Halloween. The original John Carpenter joint has been slated to rise from the dead and get a re-release on October the 25th. That's in addition to Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was in IMAX last week. We talked a little bit about that. It's been extended to run in IMAX some more. You got a bunch of Disney Pixar movies that are kind of being converted into 3D, as well as the rest of the Star Wars movies. Titanic just did that. So it's kind of one of those things that, we mentioned it with the books. You take properties that either have already made money and you know will make some more money, and you put them into a different medium, or you just kind of, hey, now with 100% more 3D.
Finding Nemo was number two at the box office. So
exactly. So if it's not broke, obviously we're going to continue to get more of this stuff. I guess one kind of movie, and I say kind of because when people think WWE movie, you think of a particular thing, and that is usually shit. WWE Studios not necessarily on the same level as Fox Searchlight or something like that. Their newest effort debuted at the TIFF Film Festival. That's called No One Lives, directed by Ryuichi Kitamura, who did Versus and Midnight Meat Train. And it will be starring WWE superstar Brodus Clay alongside Luke Evans. The film follows a group of highway killers who kidnap a wealthy couple to find things aren't exactly what they seem. And this movie may be not exactly what it seems. And it seems like a shitty movie.
But right. At TIFF, actually, this was a movie that wasn't regarded as being very good. But after the first group of people saw it, it caught word of mouth that it's really fun. There's some really gory and awesome deaths in it. And a lot of people are calling it the best movie they've put out.
What exactly is that saying? Like, the best movie WWE films has put
right,
out?
Right, right. Some of the movies WWE films has put out have been See No Evil, The Marine, The Condemned, 12 Rounds, Marine 2, Legendary, Knucklehead, Chaperone, That's What I Am. All of those movies were starring WWE superstars.
Yeah.
So I think what they were doing was trying to give them another avenue and to make some money in the process. But what has happened now is that WWE Studios are actually trying to compete otherwise. Even though Brodus Clay is in this movie, he's just kind of along for the ride.
It's not a Funkasaurus film.
Right, right, right. They have 11 more films announced already throughout the next couple years, all the way into 2015-16, I believe. And one of them is Leprechaun Origins. So there you go. I don't know how that's going to be, but they bought the franchise. The thing that really allows WWE Studios to keep making movies is the fact that they're making money.
True. I mean, if you put, Stone Cold Steve Austin in a movie, there's a certain amount of people's with what question mark t-shirts that are going to be there to see a movie with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Speaking of Stone Cold Steve Austin, he was in The Condemned, which had a budget of $20 million, which was pretty large for WWE Studios. It made $8 million in the theaters, but then it made
on DVD.
$22 million on DVD already.
Yeah.
So it's already $10
million
in the plus.
Yeah.
See No Evil, which was their first effort, it was an $8 million budget. It made $18 million in theaters along with $16 million already on DVDs. So it made, $26 million profit. The Marine was a $20 million budget. $22 million in theaters, $30 million on DVD.
$32 million? Yep. I can do that real quick.
Yeah. Well, that was.
I'm paying attention.
Yeah. So, those movies are allowing them to make others, and while no one's going to call these movies fantastic by any means, they're making money. It's a machine that's running on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's plenty of shit movies that come out, and I don't think I haven't seen all of their movies. I mean, we saw See No Evil.
Yeah.
I don't think. That wasn't a great horror movie, but Kane didn't ruin it.
Right.
And I think, what else have I seen? I saw the Triple H one, not The Chaperone, the other one he did. It wasn't terrible. It was the one where him and his brothers, something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I forget what it was called.
The Reunion, probably.
Yeah, was it. Which wasn't a terrible movie. But, I think these guys, I mean, they are performers. I mean, they're essentially actors. I mean, I don't think I'm like...
Yeah, I guess...
Breaking kayfabe here?
Yeah, I guess what I want to talk about is the fact that they're getting ambitious. That this movie... I mean, at first, these movies were being helmed and written by WWE themselves, whereas now they're just stamping their name on it. Like, Kitamura, we both liked Versus, yeah. And I really liked Midnight Meat Train. So, sure, they're throwing Brodus Clay in, but this is a movie where we've talked about a movie already today where it's this happens and you find out it's not what it seems. So they're making movies consistent to what's in theaters.
Yeah, which is nice that they're able to kind of transition into just, they're a movie studio now. They're a legit,
right.
Kind of a legit
right.
Movie studio. And we talked about a movie a couple weeks ago, and we were scratching our heads looking through the trailer to find the WWE wrestler. I mean, Dominic Moynihan was
yeah.
in it.
Yeah, that's the day where these guys are in a house and a bunch of people are trying to kill them.
Yeah, which, I mean, it looks like a, you know, an all right kind of crazy person yeah. movie, but again, you know, it didn't seem like there were any wrestlers, which isn't, you know, a good thing or a bad thing. It's just, it's a movie, happens to be made by WWE Studios, so God bless them. As far as I can tell from the trailer from The Emperor, we do have somebody from Lost, Matthew Fox.
Uh-huh.
We got Tommy Lee Jones,
uh-huh.
but I didn't see any wrestlers.
Nope.
What I did see in the trailer was Tommy Lee Jones essentially playing what I would call his George C. Scott role, as he's playing General MacArthur, not Patton. But, you know, in the buzz from this movie, the trailer premiered at TIFF. This seems like a movie that, you know, he, again, is the best part of it, maybe underutilized in it, because he does look really awesome in the trailer.
He does look good, but for the market of this movie, do you have to be a war geek? Do you have to be, you know, to understand that it's MacArthur?
I think you do have to be, you know, a History Channel watcher, because I don't think it's as heavy on the battle.
Right.
It's not. It takes place after the war's over.
I mean, based on the trailer doesn't really show anything.
Yeah.
You see Tommy Lee Jones firing up some troops, and you hear a voiceover, which Patton was an awesome movie. People mm-hmm. liked Patton, so if this one is anything at all like Patton, I think it could be all right. But like you said, I think you have to be a History Channel watcher or war geek to really enjoy this as much as the common man.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of History Channel watchers that are queuing up outside of the details. That is kind of a bit of a dramedy, I guess I would call it, because there were times when I laughed watching the trailer. Essentially, Tobey Maguire just kind of loses his shit.
Yeah.
Shit starts going really bad for him, and he's fucking a bunch of chicks.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire fucks every girl on the planet
everyone.
In this trailer. I like the pacing and the tone of the trailer. You know, they've got this ominous stuff just building up to a head. And I like that Pedro Serrano from Major League and the Allstate commercials, he can't hit a curveball, but he does seem to act well alongside Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, I think the trailer was really neat. It was put together kind of well.
The funny thing about this movie is that I buy Tobey Maguire in this role.
Yeah.
When you think about
More so than Peter Parker,
right,
I think.
Right.
I also completely by Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln. We got a trailer. The first trailer for that, is, as far as I know, did come out this week. Or maybe it was last week. A little bit less Saving Private Ryan. A little bit less Daniel Day-Lewis than you think would be in a trailer for a movie when he's playing the central character. Score is done by John Williams, who's done a couple movies that I kind of like, whatever. The score is very, I think it's more present in the trailer than Lincoln is.
I think you're right. I don't know if this is going to make sense. But in your mind, if you haven't seen the trailer, imagine Steven Spielberg movies meets a movie about Abraham Lincoln, and it's exactly what I expected.
Yeah.
It looks and feels exactly like what I expected.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, and I already did say, is this is a little bit less Saving Private Ryan. There's not a lot of battle sequences to it, because
right.
it's mostly after the Civil War is over, or it's at least coming to its imminent close. But yeah, you're exactly right. It does seem very Steven Spielberg-y with the soldier giving Lincoln's speech back to Lincoln. Looks kind of interesting. Not Spielberg-y at all is the trailer for Texas Chainsaw 3D. And it's, from everything I can tell about the trailer, it's not really a remake like, you know, we had with the Jessica Biel Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's more of a sequel, but it takes place 40 years after.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting, and I like that it's not just a regurgitated remake. I could have used a bit more Leatherface, but I'm glad they didn't overuse him in the trailer.
Yeah, you never really got a nice, like, solid shot of him, just little teases. And I can guarantee that I'll like this trailer more than I'll like the movie itself.
Probably.
But it's a stereotypical horror, a remake of a remake of a remake of a remake. It's like you said, it's not a shot-for-shot remake. It's like a reimagining, but at this point, Texas Chainsaw Massacre has been remade and redone, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, you might be right.
Because you had the Zellweger one in
yeah.
Matthew McConaughey. You had the Jessica Biel one. Mm-hmm. And now you get this one.
There's a couple Texas Chainsaw Massacres. There's a bunch of creepy kid movies, too. We already talked about one. It's the dude with the bag on his face. We got another one here. Now, this one's from Guillermo del Toro. Good people involved in this. It's called Mama. Jessica Chastain plays not necessarily the mama, but kind of the surrogate mama for these crazy, like, feral kids that get found in a cabin in the woods. They've been living there for, I don't know, a while, enough to go feral. Chastain and her husband take them in, and weird shit happens.
Yeah. I thought it looked pretty scary. The one thing I want to clarify is that all the marketing around this film makes it seem as though it's a Guillermo del Toro movie, and it's just presented by him. It's actually directed by Tony Muschietti and presented by del Toro, but the one girl says mama at least 80 times in the trailer.
That's almost the only thing she says.
Right, yeah. And if she says it that many times in the trailer, I'm guessing she says it about 450 in the movie, and at that point,
that's just not nice.
I will be haunted by this movie because of I'll be hearing mama in my sleep.
Yeah, I think you'd probably be haunted by a few things. It does look kind of creepy. The next movie, Stand Up Guys, essentially the way I look at it is if you take Red, that old action movie with old people, sub in action for mobsters, so it's like an old mobster movie with a bunch of old people. You mix in a bit of In Bruges, which is kind of exciting. It's Al Pacino, Christopher Walken, and Alan Arkin playing aging mobsters. Pacino gets out of jail, and Christopher Walken, one of his best friends, gets hired to whack him off.
Yep. All those things you said are all exciting, but I don't meet this with shared optimism.
I'm not necessarily optimistic. I wouldn't be surprised if it was good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily...
I just don't think they're giving me anything new, anything original. They're just, if this wasn't the actors that it was, I don't think, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. The next movie on here is one we talked about a while ago. They just released a Red Band trailer for it, and I thought, oh, maybe this will be worth talking about. It's The Oranges. It's Hugh Laurie, Leighton Meester, Alia Shawkat, Oliver Platt. There's a bunch of Catherine Keener, the usual suspects, kind of, in indie films. Hugh Laurie is good friends with Leighton Meester's parents. He ends up fucking her. The Red Band trailer, not that much different than the regular one, except I think they drop an F-bomb, and that might be... Oh, there's some drug usage.
Yeah.
I think that's really the only thing that makes it a Red Band trailer.
I'm excited for Dr. House to finally, you know, get out there and be featured in some movies. It looks like a solid cast. What'll probably be an all-right movie. It's not going to reach a large audience, but it looks pretty good.
I don't think... You May Not Kiss the Bride is going to reach any audience. And the only reason I put this on here is because it's worth watching the trailer, at least for Rob Schneider.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's good.
No.
It's not because it's good Rob Schneider. It's just Rob Schneider.
It's Rob Schneider playing one of his characters from an Adam Sandler movie as a featured character. And it looks just miserable. Everything about this movie, I think this movie was made and it just hasn't been released yet. I think it's been done a while.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's watch it for Rob Schneider, and the chick that's in it's kind of hot too, so yeah, watch it for that. Everybody Has a Plan sounded really, really cool. It is a Spanish movie starring Viggo Mortensen, and it's essentially like an identity-switching history of violence. I'm not really sure from watching the trailer why Viggo has to switch identities. He plays two roles in the film. He plays, I think, a doctor. I don't speak Spanish, and a vagrant. They switch their brothers. They switch identities for some reason. One of them ends up dead. I don't know which one, and maybe it's because it's Spanish. Doesn't help me out. But
I prefer my Viggo Mortensen in Middle Earth, or
with his dick out,
or fighting guys in a bathhouse with his dick out. So it looks all right. The trailer kind of does enough to where I want to know what the fuck's going on, but at the same time, it's like, do I want to bother? Do I care that much to know what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it sounded cool when I read about it, and then I watched a trailer, and I thought, fuck, I wish this wasn't subtitled.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'll read subtitles, but I got so damn confused watching this. Was not at all confused watching the trailer for Smashed. It's starring Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad and Mary Elizabeth Winstead from, I'm going to go ahead and say, from Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That was probably her most
I said famous Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, from The Thing. It's the way I look at it, it's kind of a lighter way to deal with drug addiction than that Keep the Lights On movie with the gay gentleman.
Yeah.
This is how you would kind of tackle the same thing, but do it funny and make you not feel shitty about yourself.
Yeah, this was the favorite of the trailers we watched this week for me. I really like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I think she's awesome. Just swell. But I like the trailer.
Did you change a tire on your car or something?
Yeah. But, yeah, I like... I think this looks awesome. This is really my type of movie. I kind of tend to lean towards indie cinema, and this is like the festival darling. This is, you know, making its way around all the film festivals, and it's doing really well. It's picking up jury selections and all sorts of trophies.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be a smashing success. Next one, it probably won't be a lot of smashing success. Probably smashing some faces in, though. It's Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning. They're getting ridiculous with these movies now because it's like the fourth legitimate Universal Soldier. And I think they determine legitimate by does it have Jean-Claude in it. And you laugh, but I think that's actually true. This one stars half the cast of The Expendables. Jean-Claude, Dolph Lundgren, some other dude that was in The Expendables, whose name escapes me now. And one of my personal favorites, the professional sexy man, Andre the Pitbull Orlovsky. All three of those main guys were in the last Universal Soldier movie, which I'm pretty sure I saw, but I don't understand how they went from the last movie where I think JCVD was a good guy, now all of a sudden he's bald and a bad guy.
Yeah.
Nothing makes any sense.
No.
So if you're a fan of Universal Soldier, watch this trailer and tell me what the fuck just happened.
I'll tell you what just happened. There was actually someone in the trailers I liked more than Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and it's professional sexy man Andre Orlovsky.
Was he in the trailer? Because I don't think
I
saw him.
He's in a truck, and you see him... shout in celebration at one point.
Oh, shit. But, I'm going to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah, I would watch this. I would watch this on what I call bad movie night. I would rent this for a buck and give it a run.
Well, there you go. It's Kevin's suggestion. Rent that for a buck. You'll have to, I probably would rent Dread for a buck. Dave's really pumped up about seeing this, and I'm sure now that he's got an infant at the house, a newborn, he'll probably be able to go see it. Actually, there's a couple of movies. Fuck. Three of these four movies Dave really would probably want to see. That is, of course, Dread, End of Watch, starring podcast darling Anna Kendrick. House at the End of the Street, starring podcast darling, if Dave has his way, J-Law. And Trouble with the Curve. In limited release, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. And starring podcast darling, if I got my way to say about it, backwards, that's the James Vanderbeek movie.
Yeah, The Dawson.
The Dawson, he's back on the creek.
Which of these wide releases you think is going to do the best?
Oh, fuck. I'm going to go not Dread. I'm going to say it's either going to be House at the End of the Street or End of Watch.
With these four, I would say End of Watch, House at the End of the Street, Dread, Trouble with the Curve.
I would probably agree with that. Well, let's not do an over-under. Let's just go, yeah, let's just, like, we'll pick. No. We both agreed, hates... End of Watch, Dread, Curve, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll check that next week, see if we're right. Oh, excellent. You did write in here. Usually we like to give you some suggestions on what to watch when if you're not going to go queue up to see any of these movies. Dave, from beyond the microphone, has given us a what to watch. We should tell you what to watch through Dave, and I will do that. He says the FP... just got added to Netflix Instant Watch Day, which I'm assuming he just watched that caring for his newborn baby. If you're like me and you said, what the fuck is the FP? Dave says, it's Dance Dance Revolution to the Death.
So yeah, I saw the trailer for this and it looked very interesting. And at first I actually thought this was a fake trailer that someone had made just fucking around. But... it turns out it's a real movie.
It's legit. It's on Netflix now streaming.
Yeah. I will tell you what I want you to watch. We talked a lot about TIFF, Toronto International Film Festival, and we talked about some wrestling.
We did.
A movie that actually premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival a few years ago and is about wrestling is The Wrestler, which it's Darren Aronofsky's movie starring Mickey Rourke as a...
wrestler.
As a wrestler. And he's at the end of his career. He's trying to hold on... get his life straightened out. It's really fantastic. It's a good film.
So check out The Wrestler. It is a good movie. I can vouch for that. My watch list for the week, we also talked a bit about per screen averages, which we did today, and we do a lot when Dave's here. And one of the movies that we talked about, per screen average at nauseam, is The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. If you're like me, you missed that movie while it was in the theaters, it is now available on DVD. This podcast goes up on late Monday, depending on how ambitious I feel tonight, or Tuesday. If you listen to it on Tuesday, it's available now. If you're listening to it really early Monday nights, Tuesday morning, I don't know, go to Walmart and see if you can talk him into selling you Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. But either way, it'll be available on Tuesday. Check it out. It did really, really well in the amount of screens that it was released on. This is the point in the podcast where we tell you what to do, tell you a bunch of things to do. I am going to mention, we did, if in case you didn't hear our show last week, you should, at least for our Fantasy Film Ball league that we're putting together. Dave and I picked five movies each. There's no crossover between the two of us. I was going to make Kevin give me his five this week, but we are running out of time. His lady friend was nice enough to submit her five, so you really should get on the stick, because this is half your podcast, and she's already done it.
Yeah, she went with the smart ones, and she picked The Hobbit.
I wasn't gonna say what she picked.
She picked.
So nobody else picks her five.
Oh, okay. Well, then you know she picked The Hobbit and nothing else.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Yeah. She went with Dave's number one pick,
yeah.
The Hobbit. But if you would like to send us five movies, and why wouldn't you? You can send them to us. Probably the best way to do it is moviesonlineup@gmail.com. Mail us your five selections, and essentially what we're going to do is the amount of money that they make domestically between their release and December the 31st. For every $10 million, you will get 1 point. For every award nomination that it receives, we'll just we'll go with Oscars, because that's what I'm saying now. For every Oscar award nomination, that will be 5 points. And for every win, that's 10 points. Whoever's got the most points will win a prize pack. The prize pack will probably include some buttons, some stickers, perhaps a t-shirt, but probably some movies, too. Some starring some Movies on Up favorites. And you can guess what kind of movies you're going to get in that. But, yeah, the deadline for entry into our contest will be the last day of September, whatever that is, the 31st, the 30th, whatever. Get them to us by then, and we will enter you into the contest. We'll go ahead and keep track of your score, so you don't need to worry about it. Somebody will win. It won't be me. It won't be Dave, and it won't be Kevin. Could be his lady friend.
Maybe.
We'll have to see. She picked some good movies. So do the same. And send them to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. I guess you could tweet them to us, @moviesonup, or there might be a way you could do it on the Facebook. I don't really know how that works. But go to our website, moviesonup.com. So click on our Facebook link. You can get over to the Facebook page. Or I guess you could get a hold of Kevin.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Kevin Bradway is my name, Bradway. I am @KevinBradway on Twitter. On both of those mediums, I do pimp out the show quite a bit. So if you didn't get one of the 50 ways that Ryan told you to get at us, get at me and I'll get you there. You can send me your picks too. If you want to send me Fantasy Film Ball picks, I'll make sure they get to the appropriate avenue.
Yeah, because there's really no way that they're going to get to me unless they get to one of my co-hosts and then they give them to me.
Right.
That's just how this works.
Ryan lives in a cave.
Yeah, and I don't want you interacting with me. I don't want you sending anything to me. No pictures, no film ball, no nothing. Although, it's going to be too late at this point, but if you do happen to show up at Tinseltown on Thursday, October the 25th at 8 o'clock, you could hand me a wadded up sheet of notebook paper that has your Fantasy Film Ball picks on it. It'll be far too late at that point. You won't win a prize pack, but, you know, I'll probably accept your selections and say, great job, way to go. But, yeah, that's if you want to get a hold of me, that's where you can do it. I will be in the Youngstown area, Boardman, at Tinseltown on that evening to see the Riff Tracks version of Birdemic.
I'm trying to make it happen, too, so we might get a two.
Yeah, maybe you can meet both of us. Dave and Grayson probably not going to be there. But we will, you know, we'll pass on your well wishes to him. Of course, speaking of Dave, probably won't be any Dave next week. We'll definitely have Kevin. And, think about your Fantasy Film Ball stuff. Get it into us before the end of September. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Till then, keep it up.